these two people, you know, became some of the most prominent representatives of what press freedom means.
Myanmar frees two Reuters journalists. It's Wednesday, May 8th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Look for us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, global markets fall as trade talks near. A medicinal cure is discovered. Thailand's Cave Boys, soon to be a movie. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Two Reuters journalists are back with their families and colleagues after being released from prison in Myanmar, after President Win Myint issued a blanket pardon for thousands of prisoners. Wallone and Cha Soo-oo had been sentenced to 7 years in jail for breaking the Official Secrets Act. The pair was investigating the massacre of 10 Rohingya by police and soldiers in the village of Indin at the time of their arrest in 2017. Their colleagues watched and cheered as Wallone and Cha Soo-oo walked free Tuesday. Wallone spoke to reporters.
We are really happy and excited to see our families and colleagues. And I don't know what to say. We are very excited.
Their long-awaited reunion with the families comes just 2 weeks after Myanmar's Supreme Court rejected an appeal of their convictions. At one point in their trial, a law enforcement official testified he planted documents on the two men. VOA Asia's Ira Melman reached the Deputy Asia Director at Human Rights Watch. He spoke with Phil Robertson via Skype from Kuala Lumpur, asking Robertson why the decision to free the two reporters was made now.
Well, the real reason was international pressure. The people at Reuters had done a very, very effective campaign to bring this to the leaders of the world. These two journalists won the Pulitzer Prize for the actual story that they wrote that the Burmese military didn't like. I mean, it's quite clear that this is a situation where these two people became some of the most prominent representatives of what press freedom means, not only in Southeast Asia, but also the world. I mean, they had become a cause célèbre. The government put them all the way through their actual legal system, even though quite clearly they should have been arrested in the first place, much less prosecuted. And ultimately, you know, having kept them in prison for 500 days, decided they were going to cut their losses. And they've let them go now. And we welcome that. We welcome that they're now home with their families and ultimately will be able to go back to their newsrooms. But it's quite clear that they did nothing wrong here. This is all about the government and the military trying to persecute critics who dare report stories that they don't like.
And I take it you think that the fact that they were released does not change the government's outlook on that?
No, not at all. And ultimately, the government would probably say that justice was served, a rule of law was carried out, all that. And the reality is that when you have someone who appeared on the stand in the court, a policeman, a senior officer who said as a prosecuting witness that, in fact, you know, I was ordered by my superior to set these people up, and the court still convicted them. You know, just shows how, the lack of real judicial independence we see in Myanmar.
We have just observed Press Freedom Day. I don't know if that had anything specifically to do with it, but how big of a problem? Obviously, it's a problem. But as far as Asia is concerned, how big of a problem and where?
Well, I mean, in Myanmar, we have well over 30 journalists who are still in prison or facing charges. And we're getting more every day. We just had a group of journalists in Sitwe charged under the Unlawful Associations Act, which is another colonial law from the British era, just like the Official Secrets Act that these two are charged under. We have people have been charged under 66D of the Telecommunications Act. We have people being charged under a provision of the penal code that says that you can't say anything bad about the military. I mean, it goes on and on and on. What we're seeing is the military and the civilian government led by Aung San Suu Kyi both playing a role in trying to shut down critical reporting in Myanmar. If we go beyond Myanmar in places like obviously Vietnam and Laos, that's not free. That's controlled by the governments. But even places like Singapore. Singapore is about to pass an anti-fake news law that is going to allow a minister to arbitrarily determine what is false and what is misleading news. And that has extraterritorial ramifications connected to anything discussed about Singapore anywhere in the world. So quite clearly, Southeast Asia is leading a spiral to the bottom when we talk about press freedom.
The United States welcomed Myanmar's decision on Monday to free the reporters so they can return to their families following over 500 days of imprisonment. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo wrote on Twitter, "We hope to see the release of other imprisoned journalists and a greater freedom of expression." Reuters editor-in-chief Stephen J. Adler said in a statement, "We are enormously pleased that Myanmar has released our courageous reporters. Since their arrests 511 days ago, they have become symbols of the importance of press freedom around the world. We welcome their return." A special United Nations investigative panel has accused Myanmar's military of carrying out numerous atrocities during the 2017 crackdown against the Rohingya Muslims with genocidal intent. The UN panel is calling for the prosecution of its top generals, including the Army's commander-in-chief of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you go online and visit voanews.com. Myanmar sets Reuters reporters free. Top Chinese economic official to travel to United States for new round of trade talks. Official Thai election results favor anti-military party. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories, photos and videos too, when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Global markets have been volatile after President Donald Trump threatened Sunday to raise tariffs on China. Although Beijing has indicated it will continue trade negotiations scheduled this Wednesday in Washington, the escalating tension between the two powers may have an impact beyond trade, as the Trump administration needs Beijing's support on various issues, including dealing with North Korea and Iran. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has this report.
After U.S. trade officials met with their Chinese counterparts in Beijing last week, Chinese officials say a delegation still plans to travel to Washington to continue talks on Wednesday, despite President Donald Trump's threat to raise tariffs.
As far as the Sino-U.S. economic and trade negotiations are concerned, we all know that 10 rounds of talks have been conducted and positive progress has been made.
On Sunday, Trump tweeted that by Friday, he would raise import taxes from 10% to 25% on $200 billion in Chinese products. Washington is already charging 25% duty on an additional $50 billion of Chinese imports, while Beijing has imposed penalties on $110 billion of American goods.
I think the president is a little bit frustrated that it's taken a while to get a deal. He's trying to get the best possible deal. And I think he's also playing to his base. He wants people to see that he's being tough on China, so that if there is a deal this week, then he's going to be able to say, I got the best deal possible. I was really tough on them.
Trump's tweet appeared to have triggered volatility in global markets, with investors already jittery about the ongoing U.S.-China trade war. There are concerns Trump's rhetoric will jeopardize negotiations.
And if they do come to a negotiated agreement by the end of that period, they have to contend with a domestic audience in China that would view this as a capitulation to the United States. Every country has its politics. China, of course, is no exception.
Both countries have economic incentives to reach a deal so that the two leaders could meet again for a signing ceremony in the coming months, as has been speculated. While the two sides insist they are not using trade negotiations as leverage for other issues, for the Trump administration, the incentive goes beyond trade.
Not only is the United States looking to China to help with DPRK, but the U.S. is also asking China to cut back on its purchases of Iranian oil in an effort to squeeze the Iranian regime.
Washington's maximum pressure strategy towards Pyongyang, which includes tough sanctions, partly depends on Beijing as North Korea's main ally and sponsor. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News at the White House.
We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. A potential antidote to a potentially lethal box jellyfish sting has been discovered by Australian researchers. From Sydney, Phil Mercer shares the news.
The box jellyfish carries enough venom to kill more than 60 people. It's one of the most dangerous marine animals in Australia's waters. Its tentacles have millions of stinging cells. Each one contains a tiny harpoon connected to a venom-filled bulb. The pain they inflict is excruciating and causes skin to die. If the dose of venom is large enough, it can lead to cardiac arrest and death within minutes. Scientists in Sydney have used genome editing, where DNA is manipulated to find a molecular antidote that blocks the symptoms of a sting if applied within 15 minutes. Associate Professor Greg Neely says there have been successful trials on rodents.
That was the eureka moment, is that this is actually could work as an antidote, and it's also safe.
Well, the drug is already known to be safe in humans, so now we just have to basically show efficacy for jellyfish venom. So it could be quickly, within a year or two.
Scientists believe the drug will stop skin dying and the intense pain when applied, but they don't know yet if it will prevent a heart attack. However, the Australian Marine Stinger Advisory Service said it believes the preferred first treatment for jellyfish stings is vinegar. Box jellyfish are also found in Indonesia, Thailand, parts of Africa, and the Gulf of Mexico. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, take an Uber to the new Thailand Cave Boys movie. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia. Thailand's Election Commission has officially endorsed results from the country's March 24th general election, declaring the Phu Thai Party, associated with fugitive former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat, topped the field by winning 136 constituencies. It's not clear who will form the next government. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, ride-sharing giant Uber is about to go public, while a Thai boys soccer team has come out of a cave and into a movie. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Uber Technologies, the world's largest ride-hailing company, plans an initial public offering between $80 billion and $91 billion, which values the company as much as one-third below what the startup insiders had hoped for. Uber exited Southeast Asia last year, selling its local business to Grab. It now uses Singapore as its headquarters for Asia Pacific, where it has 9 markets, including in Japan, Korea, and Australia. Despite its hold in Asia, Uber's market presence hasn't been as strong as in the United States, where it has managed to garner 70% of the ride-sharing market. It didn't take long for Uber to get up enough demand for all of its 180 million shares, and some investors still stand to make huge gains worth millions of dollars. A new production deal about last July's dramatic rescue of 12 boys and their soccer coach from a flooded cave in Thailand has just been signed. Netflix has teamed up with the makers of the Crazy Rich Asians film. Since the dramatic saga came to an end, the boys, several of them from poor and marginalized ethnic hill tribes, have been reveling in invites from the likes of professional football clubs and TV shows like Ellen DeGeneres. No financial details on this latest production deal have been given yet. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. In addition to all of the digital choices you have to hear our program, like iTunes and SoundCloud, VOA Asia Facebook, and of course our website, voanews.com, there's another choice you have. Hear us on the radio. Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines carries our program. We'd like to say hello and thank you to everyone there who is listening today. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a super day.